Case number 15-1274, Orangeburg, South Carolina, petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Horwood for the petitioner, Ms. Fasella for the respondent.
Good morning, I'm James Horwood, representing the petitioner of the City of Orangeburg, South Carolina. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This case involves FERC orders approving a new wholesale power resource that is unduly discriminatory. Duke, Progress, and their wholesale customers can and will enjoy this resource, but Orangeburg cannot because of State of North Carolina's control over wholesale sales in which it picks winners and losers. Orangeburg has been in the market for a number of years trying to avail itself of FERC's competitive market regime, but it's been thwarted by actions by the North Carolina Commission and by FERC's failure or refusal to address Orangeburg's concerns.
You have a contract right now, correct?
Yes.
And that contract goes until 2023, is that correct?
It ends either at the end of 2022 or 2023.
Okay. How far in advance does Orangeburg tend to start contracting or looking for a possible new contract? Because I assume you don't do these things at the last minute.
No, it takes about 3 years. FERC Commissioner Moeller in his dissent and a declaratory order proceeding we had did a pretty good job of outlining what the process is. You put out a request for proposals, you get proposals in, you evaluate them, then you sit down and negotiate a contract. And that's what happened back and started in 2005, and Orangeburg and Duke entered into a contract in 2008. Mm-hmm. So that took about 3 years.
So how is your interest in a contract possibly with Duke in 2023 ripe for our review now, or how is your injury imminent now?
The joint dispatch agreement, which we're complaining about, accepts effectively the conditions that Duke and Progress agreed to with the North Carolina Utilities Commission staff that gives the North Carolina Commission the right to review the contract. And it contains within it the indication of who get to be considered native load wholesale customers. And Orangeburg's excluded from that definition. Native load wholesale customers are all of what's called traditionally served wholesale customers in it, and they're listed. And a glaring omission is Orangeburg. Orangeburg has never been served by Duke or Progress under FERC's market-based rate regime. Orangeburg's entitled to buy from whatever willing seller wants to sell to it, and the state of North Carolina has taken Duke and Progress off of the table.
Is Orangeburg paying more for energy right now than it would be if that joint dispatch agreement had been struck down the way that you are requesting?
Orangeburg wouldn't be affected right now, but it would be affected at the time it goes into the market. Now, we don't know whether Duke or Progress would bid at that time, but we, absent the North Carolina Regulatory Commissions, but we know that with the regulatory conditions, they will not bid. And we also know that other potential suppliers know that Duke and Progress won't be able to bid, which therefore eliminates the discipline of competitive markets that FERC has kind of implied or has provided for in its regime of open access transmission and competitive markets. FERC, when it...
Well, perhaps then, I mean, I know that your client is quite frustrated because you sought a declaratory ruling from FERC previously that got, you know, dismissed as moot because of the contract being, voluntarily terminated. But perhaps your remedy is to, when you begin the process of, you know, seeking bids, if you don't receive the bids that you believe that you otherwise would because of the NCUC ruling, then you could initiate a petition at that point with FERC, and then if FERC doesn't give you relief, you could come to this court.
That's kind of fine in theory, but that's not how the market works. I think the important thing from Orangeburg's standpoint is when it goes out to the market, it wants to have as many potential bidders as it can, because that's the way the market's supposed to work. And Orangeburg and Duke won't be bidders. They have no ability to be bidders when they entered into the agreements to get the merger approved by the North Carolina Commission and agreed to the regulatory conditions. Among the regulatory conditions they agreed to was something that and can properly be called a gag order. They don't have the ability to ask the North Carolina Commission or any other court for relief. So they disabled themselves from being able to come in and say, we want to be able to serve the market. With those shackles removed, then they could be potential bidders. And from Orangeburg's standpoint, what's important is that other potential bidders know that, and that eliminates the market discipline. When FERC issued its Order 888, kind of moved from a position of kind of guaranteed supply for wholesale customers from their traditional resource at regulated rates, which are generally cost-based rates. And FERC found that we can have a competitive market, and that'll discipline prices, and that'll be a better way to deal with these issues than trying to regulate rates. And a major part of that was FERC issued its kind of open access transmission requirements to make sure that competitive markets were there.
Well, if this court were to hold that FERC should not have approved the joint dispatch agreement, how does that help you? Because won't Duke still be bound by the North Carolina Utility Commission regulations, which are on the books in North Carolina?
I think, I guess what we're asking the court to do is to say that the joint dispatch agreement should not be approved unless the regulatory conditions in North Carolina are changed, because the joint dispatch agreement is subject to those regulatory conditions, and we're asking for relief here because this interferes with FERC's jurisdiction. The state of North Carolina is trying to regulate wholesale sales.
I don't think we are in a position to directly review the North Carolina utility regulations. You have to challenge those within the North Carolina court system. What we can review is a federal commission's action, and isn't the most that you could get here is a decision from FERC that would strike out any incorporation of those regulations in the joint dispatch agreement, but not, I don't know that FERC can issue an order that makes the North Carolina regulations themselves disappear in the posture of this proceeding.
Well, what the joint dispatch agreement does is it defines who native load customers are and who are entitled to native load treatment. And because of the existence of the North Carolina Regulatory Commissions, which FERC was informed about by us and others, Orangeburg can't be a native load customer. But under the whole scheme of interstate regulation, FERC regulation, states don't get to determine which wholesale customers are able to get served or at which rates. And that's what is happening here with the state deciding who get to be considered native load customers.
It seems that in the in your argument in your brief in favor of standing, you say that, that FERC could redress your that an order from this court could redress your injury because we could order FERC to do something akin to what was done in that California Public Utility Commission's case.
Yes.
FERC, I'll ask them about this when they stand up here, but they don't respond to that in their brief other than to say that, well, we have discretion to act as we did in that California Public Utilities Commission case, and if we choose not to exercise that discretion, then basically there's, you know, tough luck,
yeah.
I guess is but I guess your argument would be that if they're withholding their exercise of discretion is arbitrary and capricious or is not fulfilling their duty to ensure just and reasonable non-discriminatory rates, then we can compel them to exercise their discretion or vacate and remand for them to, you know, exercise their discretion with those things in mind. Is that your argument?
Well, part of our argument is that FERC does not have discretion when it's faced with undue discrimination. It's required to deal with undue discrimination which is presented to it, and we believe that that's the case here. And FERC said it's exercising its discretion. It says that in its briefs, but in FERC's order, it didn't say it was exercising its discretion. It said it need not reach Orangeburg's other arguments because it's interpreted Order 2000 in a way that we think is not permissible and goes well beyond what was intended in Order 2000. FERC and its decision dealing with the joint dispatch agreement said that states are, that states can determine who's entitled to native load treatment, as states always have. That statement by itself, which is an isolated statement, doesn't make any sense when Order 2000 is read, because the whole purpose of Order 2000 and Order 888 was to eliminate the barriers in who gets to serve in wholesale markets. You don't get rid of wholesale markets by saying, well, gee, you can sell to anybody you want so long as it's within your existing area.
Well, the commission said there in Order 2000, made that statement and said, as it always has.
Yeah.
What did it mean by that? What had it always allowed before with respect to authority to require utility commission's authority to direct least cost sales to native customers?
Well, first, we don't think that's a correct statement. But if it is a correct statement, and we're not challenging it, it's only a correct statement as it applies to retail customers, not to wholesale customers. In Order 2000, they weren't talking about wholesale customers. They were talking in terms of retail customers. And states have never lawfully regulated wholesale sales, not at least since the Attleboro decision in 1927, which gave rise to Part 2 of the Federal Power Act. So this reading of Order 2000 is justifying North Carolina control of Duke of Progress wholesale sales, contradicts Supreme Court decisions in the New England Power case and Dana Hale. The New England Power case was one where the state of New Hampshire said, we're going to keep our low-cost power within the state of New Hampshire, and you can't sell it outside the state. Supreme Court ruled that that violates Commerce Clause, and it's a state regulating interstate commerce, and which is what's involved here. And, you know, quite simply, we don't think that states get to pick winners and losers at wholesale, and this is particularly true in once you move to a market-based rate regime, which said that the incumbent utility, the one whose control area or balancing area a customer is located in, doesn't have to continue to serve that customer anymore. But in return for that, we are going to make sure that we eliminate these kind of geographic barriers. So nothing in Order 2000 speaks to what North Carolina is doing here.
Now, what the Federal Power Act says is that rates cannot be unduly discriminatory.
Yes.
It sounds like they can be duly discriminatory, and that's okay. So what is unduly discriminatory about a state deciding that, look, for our native load folks, they've borne the cost of building up this system within our state, taxpayer dollars have been used, they're going to get the least cost. And if someone new wants to come in, that's fine. But those newcomers are going to have to bear the cost of the new energy that they're getting. They're just having to pay for what they're getting. They're going to have to pay their fair share. What's unduly discriminatory about that?
Because states don't get to regulate the wholesale rates. I mean, that's the Commerce Clause. This is interstate commerce. And we're dealing with, the Dormant Commerce Clause, which says if you don't get to regulate at state level what is regulated at the federal level.
How did the New England case get to the Supreme Court?
New England Power Company, which was effectively prevented from being able to
by the state commission.
Use its resources by the state of New Hampshire, yes.
Right. But the proceeding that took place was, as I remember, New England then appealed to the Supreme Court of New Hampshire, was it? Right. So the case came up in a challenge to a state regulatory body, a judicial challenge, but in the state courts, not through FERC.
Well, that's right. That was not a FERC case.
It was not a FERC case. So, which raises a question in my mind. Did you appeal the North Carolina Utility Commission's ruling to the North Carolina courts?
Yes. We did appeal it and were told that our appeal was moot because the contract we were complaining about no longer existed. And then the North Carolina Court of Appeals said, and you have other places you can get this resolved. You can file at FERC for declaratory relief, as you have. You can file in district court for mandamus, which may have been something possible at that time, but not since the Supreme Court's Armstrong decision. They said, well, you can go other places. They didn't rule that what the North Carolina Commission had done was a proper interpretation of the Federal Power Act or was permissible. They just said that, you're too late. We're kind of faced with arguments here that, Orangeburg, you're too late because you no longer have a contract, or you're too early because you don't have a contract, or you're not in the right place. Instead of being before the North Carolina courts, you should be in before a federal commission or before federal courts, or we're now told by FERC that when we filed our declaratory relief petition that sat for 6 years because FERC couldn't get a majority to consider the case, now you're too late because the contract doesn't exist and it's moot. The only body that's ever addressed our arguments on what's permissible for states to do and native load customers was the North Carolina Commission. No court has addressed it. FERC has not addressed the merits of it, except possibly in this joint dispatch agreement, where kind of they offhanded said, well, what the North Carolina, state of North Carolina doing is okay.
So you exhausted your state remedies, is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
So you went to the North Carolina Court of Appeals. Did you go to the North Carolina Supreme Court?
I don't remember whether we did. I think we decided that since the ground for dismissal was mootness, and effectively it was moot at that time in terms of that particular proceeding, and we had other proceedings that we were pursuing. So, FERC talks about Orangeburg engaged in a multi-litigation strategy. Well, Orangeburg, in all the litigation we've been involved in, which has been a lot, has never made arguments that are inconsistent. It's always the same argument, and we can't get anybody to sit down and address the merits of our argument that what state of North Carolina is doing here is an improper interference with interstate commerce.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. I don't know if I have any time left.
We'll give you a couple minutes.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Beth Pacella for FERC. I'll start off with standing. As Judge Wilkins was saying, really, it's certainly indicating that the remedy here for Orangeburg's frustration is to, next time it gets a contract, if it's not happy with the contract, that's when it needs to litigate it. Orangeburg voluntarily did withdraw from this contract.
Well, hang on. They say we're not going to be able to get the competition for contracts that we want as long as there's this albatross hanging around Duke's neck called the North Carolina regulatory conditions. So we're not even going to be able to get it.
First of all, let me just say that Orangeburg's counsel is not correct about saying that Duke and Progress will not be able to bid. They will be able to bid. Even the North Carolina Commission's own order said Duke can bid. It just does it at the risk that possibly
you can
they
bid, but you're going to have to eat the costs.
Right. That's right.
Well, they're not going to bid. Why on earth would they engage in a futile exercise like that? It kablooed everything the first time around. Why would they go back for another round?
Your Honor, I think that Judge Wilkins' point there was, and what he was saying is, that if they don't receive bids...
Be careful trying to interpret what my point is.
No, that's right, and that's why I'm saying what I think I understood. But what I heard, what I got from you, and it was what I was thinking myself, and I would have said on my own, so I'll stop saying it as if you said it, Your Honor. I'll just say it myself. My point is, what I would have said on my own is, that when it comes time to try to negotiate a new contract, if Orangeburg determines that people aren't bidding at average cost rates and only at incremental rates, then that's the time that they would have standing to challenge.
What are they challenging? So
they'd be challenging the North Carolina Commission rules.
In North Carolina court?
They would challenge
it. And they're
going to
go there and they're going to say, we don't have bids? Are they going to show that someone would have bid but for?
Well, they can. Yeah, I think that they would be able to show that. I think they would be able to show that for sure. If Duke is offering that service to others but not to them, if that service exists, I think that the case law does support that they would be able to challenge that at that time. I do.
Are they going to show Duke wants to do it? Maybe Duke just doesn't want to have a contract with them. Maybe Duke is... got plenty of other contracts at the time, or for whatever reason, isn't interested in taking.
Well,
all
that doesn't
service.
Mean that they're standing here, though, Your Honor. That what the joint dispatch agreement did here was approve something that has nothing. It literally has no effect. And as Your Honors were asking questions, it was apparent you were, I think, understanding that even if the court did say to the commission, you can't approve the joint dispatch agreement as it is, it still wouldn't affect Orangeburg for many, many years to come. The joint dispatch agreement...
Why wouldn't it? I mean, why couldn't FERC have done something like it did in the California Public Utilities Commission
case? The California Public Utilities Commission case was a case where the California Commission came to FERC for a declaratory order saying, we want to require that specific rates are in wholesale contracts. We want to require that. And that's not a situation at all like here. So that's classic preempted. A state cannot set rates at FERC wholesale rates. That's not what's occurred here. So
I understand that's not what's occurred here, but the question is FERC has the authority, obviously, to determine whether a state utilities commission's action is unduly discriminatory or is preemptive.
Sure. Absolutely, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
And where did FERC exercise its discretion or make that judgment here?
The commission pointed specifically to Order 2000, and where the commission said where there's no retail choice, which is in North Carolina, a state commission has and always had the authority to require a utility to sell its lowest cost power to native load. Native load does include wholesale and retail, not just retail as
in-state wholesale.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
In-state wholesale?
Yes.
Or also, yes, you're not saying interstate wholesale.
No, I'm saying wholesale as well. And that's because in Order 888.
I'm sorry, this little statement here means that they have the authority to set interstate wholesale rates?
No, they have the authority to require that bundled retail, mm-hmm. but bundled, because in states where there's no retail choice, the transmission and the sale are looped together. So even a wholesale sale that uses retail that's bundled with a retail, if it's bundled together, In 888, what the commission said, In 888, which was the open access rulemaking, FERC said that it would no longer impose a FERC regulatory obligation on wholesale requirement suppliers to continue to serve their existing requirements customers, which includes retail and wholesale customers, beyond the end of the contract term.
I just want to be crystal clear. When you say they were addressing both retail, I get, and wholesale, you can have in-state wholesale contracts and interstate wholesale contracts.
You can have wholesale service that's provided as part of a bundled transmission. There wasn't if a state doesn't
unbundle. How do we know they were talking about interstate wholesale rates in that sentence you just read to me?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
How do we know we're talking about interstate wholesale rates in that sentence you just read to me as opposed to?
The whole point of 888 mm-hmm. is was to have open access, and FERC chose only to remove its own regulatory requirement that people continue to serve their existing customers mm-hmm. and said, but we will not also take jurisdiction over the contractually imposed. So we won't regulatorily.
We won't take jurisdiction, which sounds like something that isn't already their jurisdiction. And of course, that couldn't possibly mean interstate wholesale rates, which isn't.
I guess I'm not getting what your point is, Your Honor, by bringing that up.
Well, I'm trying to understand what that language is. I mean, if it actually means that FERC is saying it's fine for state. I mean, I'll just say it on the line.
Sure.
If that is interpreted as meaning, I'm reading from Order 2000 here. The where there is no retail choice, our final rule does not affect a state commission's authority to require a utility to sell its lowest cost power mm-hmm. to native load, as it always has. That's a sentence. And that just says states, you can do what you're going to do with something that's quite in your wheelhouse, state in state retail rates. But if that's now interpreted to mean, actually, that cedes to state utility commissions the power to authorize interstate wholesale rates.
No, that's not. No, okay. Absolutely. No, that's not what it is. The FERC still will set the rate, but what? Mm-hmm. And let me point out this: that native load customers does include both wholesale and retail customers for whom the supplier has an obligation to plan and operate their system. And that's what the commission didn't set aside in Order 888. It said we're only requiring open access for wholesale sales where there is retail competition. There's no retail competition in North Carolina. Therefore, there's no requirement that there be open access in North Carolina. And that's 888. Then in Order 2000, which built on 888, and that's New York versus FERC, Your Honor. The Supreme Court there, in reviewing Order 888, said FERC is perfectly fine not requiring that wholesale sales bundled states that it also require open access where there's no retail, where there's no retail options in states like North Carolina. That's New York versus FERC.
Can we get back to standing for a second?
Sure.
So if it takes the commission 6 years to decide on one of these contracts, isn't now exactly the right time for them to bring this challenge? Is there any question about imminence or ripeness, given that apparently it takes FERC 6 years? So if they want to start contracting now, they have to build in 6 years lead time to seeking these contracts.
They may even be too late. I mean, they got to go back 6 years from 2022. They should have, you know, started earlier.
All Orangeburg had to do, Your Honors, was not withdraw from the contract. It would then have had the ability. It would not have been dismissed in North Carolina court.
How could it not withdraw from a contract when Duke said we're not going to do it anymore?
No. Duke just said we will do it at incremental costs, not at the average cost that you want. So they would have had that harm. We tried to have a contract at average costs. Duke is saying North Carolina said no, we can't do that, and that's the case that they brought to the North Carolina court. But the North Carolina court dismissed it as moot because they withdrew. They didn't have to withdraw, and that's what these cases are about.
So they should basically bet the farm and stay in a bad contract just to preserve standing, so that the utility, so that FERC will rule on it.
No, that's the North Carolina court.
Or so that North Carolina will rule on it, rather than to try to get the best contract they can from whoever the current market players are.
No, they did try to get it, but that's exactly – look, you have to have injury.
I mean, they have a fiduciary responsibility to not just kind of like bet the farm and hope that they'll win in some litigation. Right?
Well, actually, it's not part of the record whether the contract that they entered into with their long, over 100-year supplier, South Carolina Gas and Electric, there's no – nothing in the record to indicate that contract is for more than the Duke contract. I don't know.
Well, do you think they're fighting over this for all these years?
Oh, no, it's
this
more than
because
the Duke
thought it was a worse deal.
No, Your Honor. Certainly, it's more than
average
cost. But that's where their injury was. So they left. They chose. They left the Duke contract, which they could have continued with. And as the North Carolina court pointed out, that contract would have gone through 2018. So that contract would still be in effect, the Duke contract. They would have had standing to challenge that. They wouldn't have been moved, and they would have been able to challenge it through the North Carolina courts and get a merits decision. And the same thing would happen
again.
Why
are they not injured by a joint dispatch agreement that essentially has the green list and the black list? The green list are the people who will get the good rate, and anyone who's not listed there is on what I will call the blacklist, and you will only be able to compete for incremental rate
because
contracts.
Your Honor, that injury, if it were to occur at all, would not happen for at least 5 years from now.
Yeah, but it's a six-year process for FERC to
but
decide.
But it's not a six-year process. That's extremely
Why
unusual.
Was it 6 years? Well,
it was 6 years from what we understand from the order. It was 6 years because the commission couldn't agree. But
how do you know they'll agree next time? It's the exact same issue.
You know, Orangeburg had the ability and chose not to, for some reason, to come into court and say we want a mandamus petition. And that happens not all the time, but it happens often enough. And 6 years is an awfully long time.
Well, we try not to encourage folks to have to go the mandamus route. That's a pretty extraordinary route. And so, really, the only question is, are they injured by the approval of the joint dispatch agreement?
No, they're not, Your Honor. Because
if I could finish my sentence,
I'm sorry.
They say they're injured by it because there's a list of the people who get the good deal. And they're not on it, which means they're on the bad deal list. And that is something that has now been ensconced in law and approved by FERC, that they will forever be on the bad deal list. And so they can't compete on equal footing with those on the good deal list to get this interstate contract for energy. But that's something that's right now, they're on that list, and that's hanging over their shoulders today. Right now, they've got that status imposed upon them by this agreement. And it's something that's going to prevent them from competing on the terms that they want to compete for this electric contract. Now, I'm not saying they're right on the merits. I'm just saying if that's how we look at what's happened to them, that's happened right now. And ordinarily, I would go, that's 6 years down the line, or 3 years down the line if you have to start 3 years in advance.
Right, Your Honor.
But when FERC has taken 6 years to decide something, which mooted out their last appeal, it's a little hard for us. It certainly had an impact on that because then they couldn't pursue the FERC decision.
If I can correct that one thing, Your Honor, FERC waiting 6 years to issue the declaratory order is not what mooted out the contract. The contract was mooted out before the declaratory order petition was filed. It was already with the contract no longer existed at
and
that
why
time.
Why did it take them 6 years to figure that out?
That I can't explain, Your Honor, but that's not before. I mean, I'm not defending the declaratory order. Orangeburg didn't even seek rehearing of the declaratory order. And
well,
so,
isn't that point that it
well,
was moved?
Well, you say that, Your Honor, but, you know, people do use mandamus, mm-hmm. and I'm not saying we want to encourage people to do that, but
mandamus
it's
against FERC?
Yes.
After the case, when FERC said the case was moot?
No. Mandamus during that six-year period. People do that. People don't wait 6 years, and it would have forced FERC's hand to make a determination, and perhaps rather than maybe arguing about the merits, they would have looked and said, wow, this has been moot since we got it. Mm-hmm. So,
are you aware of cases where we said someone doesn't have, when there's a six-year process that they're facing down and something they need to start 3 years in advance, that we've said it's not imminent or ripe because they could wait until they're really in a bind and then seek mandamus?
No, the mandamus happens to force FERC to issue an order. So not to, so if someone would file, say, you're taking too long. That's what happens. You've taken a year to issue your rehearing order.
But the problem is under the mandamus standard, someone can't do that until crisis stage. And that's back to sort of betting the farm, right? You have to wait. You can't come in and go, we're worried that they're going to take 3 years or 6 years.
No, of course.
So please
course.
Do mandamus now and put them on a good schedule. They've got to wait until it's, you know, the eve of being too late.
I wouldn't want to defend something mm-hmm. on mandamus that was 4 or 5 or 6 years on. So that would be, you know, 1 or 2 years, you're right. The commission's busy and it has a lot of orders to issue, but that's an awfully long time to just sit and then now try to use that to say, wow, a contract we voluntarily chose not to stay in so that we could continue to challenge. I mean, the case law is pretty clear that you have to have a live controversy and that you have to have an injury in fact, and they gave that up.
And why isn't the status that's imposed on them by the joint dispatch agreement the injury?
Because it's speculative to say that Duke won't offer them a contract. They said
if dispatch agreement said, you know, lists the folks that are the native load, and then it had another section that said, here are the folks
right.
who can only compete for at incremental plus, even higher.
Well,
we're
going to
list five entities that, if they ever want a contract, we don't know if they do, but if they ever want a contract, they're going to have to pay incremental plus.
That's actually not what the joint dispatch agreement says.
I'm asking a hypothetical question here.
Oh,
that's what it said in the joint dispatch agreement. If you had, a joint dispatch agreement that had not only a list of native load folks,
mm-hmm.
But also had a next section that said, as to these 10 potential contractors.
You can never contract with them.
You can contract with them. But for those folks, it's always going to cost incremental price.
Right. That would be a very different situation.
No, I'm just asking you, would that
sure,
be an injury?
That's the regulatory conditions.
I'm just asking you, is that, if they pass that right now, FERC approved a joint dispatch agreement
that had
that provision, would that be an injury?
It would certainly be much closer to injury. I would still say that when you need to, when you challenge
it. So you're saying it is
when,
or isn't?
I would still say that when you challenge that, you need to, the right time to challenge that is when it actually affects you, and that's when you try to get your next contract, which, again, is not going to take
effect. So it would not be something they could challenge now?
Till 2023. I would say that that's a closer case, Your Honor.
Now, can they come back and challenge that? Could they come back in 6 years, 3 years later, and challenge something that FERC already approved 3 years earlier?
It would be, the challenge would be that the state of North Carolina is preempted from requiring. So
they
you're
can't
saying
challenge
it's not
FERC's
even,
decision.
Can't approve. Challenge FERC's decision.
They could never challenge FERC's decision to approve that joint dispatch agreement.
No, but they would have the ability to challenge the North Carolina Regulatory Commission.
I got that, but they could never challenge FERC's decision to approve an agreement that said as to these 10 entities, they always got to pay more than everybody else. Than everyone else.
But that's not the situation here. Here, all it says is parties are deemed to have been served with a certain price level of energy. So it doesn't change at all what anyone under the contracts that people are served under what their prices are. It's just it's an internal thing between these two entities that we're deeming that you serve these people this way and we're deeming that you serve people that way, and then you exchange funds because this is all about efficiency, and the joint dispatch agreement is really actually quite a good thing. They're going to serve people more efficiently, and there's going to be cost savings.
FERC, you argue, FERC has the authority or the discretion to not address a preemption argument.
Right, Your Honor.
I'm reminded of something that Chief Justice Marshall said, that a motion to a court's discretion is not to its inclination but to its judgment, and its judgment is guided by sound legal principles. What are the legal principles that FERC uses to determine whether it exercises discretion or not?
Well, in this circumstance, that's the only thing I can speak to, Your Honor, if that's all right. At least I'll start there. In this circumstance, and I wish I had been clear earlier, but for some reason I was quite nervous this morning, and I don't know why. Anyway, if I could just say again here, FERC held in the orders here that the North Carolina Commission had the authority, and it cited Order 2000, but there's also other cases, had the authority to require that Duke serve, had the authority to require Duke in Progress to serve its native load customers, which includes wholesale and retail customers, native load ones, with the lowest cost power. And that comes from Order 888 and Order 2000. And it comes
Is that essentially a holding that North Carolina was not preempted?
I believe it is a holding that, I mean, the commission didn't say those exact words, but to me, if the commission's view is they have the authority, therefore they're not preempted. I do read the orders that way. There are additional cases in which the commission has said the same thing about that where there's no retail choice, the final rule doesn't affect the state commission's authority to require a utility to do this. New PJM companies and 105 FERC 61251, they reiterated the holding in Order 2000. But after that, San Diego Gas and Electric, which was a California energy crisis proceeding at FERC, the commission said, we recognize load-serving entities use their lowest-cost resources to serve native load, and points out that over the course of the proceeding, parties had pointed that out since August 2001. This is longstanding. It's just a given at FERC that this is okay for states without retail choice, like North Carolina, to require this. So
even if it affects customers in another state, like South Carolina?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's, I don't know why I thought so hard on that. Absolutely, because, again, open access requirements only apply. It only, in Order 888, FERC only took away its own regulatory requirement that entities continue to be served. So it took that away, but it said contracts can continue to do that. So, for example, the joint dispatch agreement is a really good example of that.
Well, wait, but just to be clear, a contract saying it's fine for you to give them, these native load folks, the lowest cost, is that the same thing as saying it's fine and FERC washes its hands of it for you also, as a consequence of that, to charge higher rates for wholesale interstate contracts? Is that necessarily included in that other statement?
I believe that it is, but it certainly is here.
Has the commission ever said that?
The commission, in this circumstance, the commission did, because the commission found the joint dispatch agreement rates to be just and reasonable. It made three rulings that are pertinent mm-hmm. here. One is that the joint dispatch agreement rates are just and reasonable. So FERC itself has determined that deeming the lower cost energy to go to native load, that is just and reasonable. FERC found that here.
No, that's different from saying give them the least cost. But does that mean that you can also, again, FERC is washing its hands of it. We're not going to stop you from charging a higher rate. Maybe you have to give higher rate to interstate ones.
Well, this
maybe you have to give that same rate.
This case is not about charging anybody rates. This case is just about deeming that certain energy is served to certain entities.
Well, I'm trying to clarify whether when it talked about the traditional authority on native load, that necessarily meant they were addressing the preemption argument about hang on. Once you start talking about an interstate wholesale rate, that's exclusive FERC jurisdiction. It can't give that away. Did they address that?
FERC has been doing this. FERC just sees this as not contradictory to the Federal Power Act and not a problem. I mean, look, FERC is not.
Because
it's concerned. It is not. It thinks it's fine, but it's being respectful of state rights and state rights.
Well, it can't be respectful in the sense of I'm ceding to states the power to regulate interstate.
And it's not doing that.
Okay, so that, well, that's what
FERC will,
I'm just not understanding how it's stopping that part.
And the contract rate in the 2008 contract rate, FERC reviewed that rate. I mean, it's a FERC. If it's an interstate rate, it's a FERC rate. But FERC is not going to require that it be done in an open access way. That's what the concern. That's really what's happening
Let me just see if I can understand your position and how this works. It's one thing for the North Carolina Utility Commission to say that Duke and other energy providers can charge the lowest rate to the native load customers in North Carolina and then charge a higher rate to non-native load customers in North Carolina. It seems to me it's a horse of a different color, so to speak, for North Carolina Utility Commission to say to Duke, this is how you can treat native load customers in South Carolina and non-native load customers in South Carolina.
I think I understand what you're saying, Your Honor. And FERC in Order 888 was saying, and Order 2000, and again, Order 2000 built on Order 888, was saying that that's okay. It is okay for, in this special circumstance of where there's bundled retail native load and where there's not unbundling in a state, and that's a state's right to choose whether to unbundle or not, and the Supreme Court blessed that determination by FERC, that it did not have to require unbundling so that it could get a handle on the wholesale portion of the bundled sale. In that circumstance, this is not a problem. Open access, FERC is not going to regulatorily require people to continue to serve, and that made open access. I mean, that's what 888 was all about.
So can you give me an example where an agreement like the present one at issue has been blessed by FERC so that I can
of course
feel more comfortable with that proposition?
Sure, Your Honor. In Nevada Power 145 FERC 61238 in 2013, the commission approved a joint dispatch agreement. Sounds very much like this one, under which the lowest cost resources for the two companies would be deemed to have provided service for each company, each other's native load. So just like here, in PJM Interconnection 134 FERC 61048 in 2011, the commission says just and reasonable for PJM Carolina's joint operating agreement to exclude hydro and nuclear, which were the lower cost energy because the state had said that you need to serve your native load with that energy, so they kept it out of.
Would you define native load for me?
Sure. Yes, Your Honor. Native load, as the commission explains in the brief, is an industry term that generally refers to a utility's existing customers whose power needs the utility is bound by franchise or contract to meet.
Okay. It's not geographic, then.
No, it's not, Your Honor.
Do you know whether Duke had any other customers outside of the boundaries of North Carolina that qualified as native load?
Duke Duke and Progress both have, my understanding, certainly one of them at least has just, you know, some in portions of South Carolina, mostly in North Carolina. So their franchise regions include portions outside of the state. And native load customers includes both wholesale and retail customers for whom a supplier has an obligation to plan and operate its system, and that's right in the Commission's regulations, 18 CFR section 33.3D4I, and in Order 2000, the Commission recognized that as well, that it includes both wholesale and retail. And that's just, it's an odd, weird, FERC-y thing, but that's not odd or weird to FERC people. Everybody kind of just knows that.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Horwood, we'll give you 2 minutes. He has no time left, right? Yeah, we'll give you 2 minutes.
Okay. As to that last point, Duke and Progress do serve in both North Carolina and South Carolina, but the native load customers are those within their balancing area or control area, the historic ones. Ms. Pacella talked a lot about Order 88, but she talked in terms of retail choice, not in terms of wholesale sales. Order 88 provides for a nationwide competitive market. And what is happening here is that's being limited by the boundaries that FERC has allowed the State Commission to address. Duke, which bid for the contract, has an open access transmission tariff. Duke has market-based rates. Market-based rates are whatever a willing buyer and seller negotiate. We're dealing with bilateral contracts. Duke negotiated a contract with average system costs. What the North Carolina Commission did is they said the filed FERC rate, which is the contract rate that Duke and Orangeburg negotiated, won't be honored. This kind of gets back to the Nantahala case of the Supreme Court, where the North Carolina Commission, dealing with two subsidiaries of Alcoa, said, we're going to assume that the costs of these two subsidiaries are combined rather than treating them separately, as FERC has done. And Supreme Court overturned State of North Carolina there, saying, no, North Carolina has to honor the wholesale rate.
But there FERC had approved a specific rate, and the consequences of what North Carolina did was to say, no, that's not going to be the rate. Here, FERC has actually approved, there is no conflict, FERC has approved the same rate that's consistent with North Carolina regulations.
That's right, but what FERC has approved is a rate that is unduly discriminatory, and FERC has the obligation.
That's what I was trying to ask you, how do we know it's unduly discriminatory if, I think their theory is that, no, we allow this little bit of discrimination as part of this for states that have no retail choice and these obligations, we allow them to have this special treatment for native load customers because they're in a different situation. And so maybe you can call it discriminatory, but it's not unduly discriminatory under 888 and 2000. Can you answer that?
That arguably would apply if we're talking about retail customers. Mm-hmm. But the question of whether wholesale rates are unduly discriminatory is something for FERC to determine, not for the states to determine. And that's what FERC has the duty to remedy here. And it's not enough for FERC to say that, these aren't unduly discriminatory because we're going to let the states decide. The states don't get to decide at wholesale. They may get to decide at retail, but certainly not at wholesale. And what you've seen with FERC's argument here is what Orangeburg has been faced with. We're never at the right time and at the right place. Mm-hmm. It's kind of fatuous to say that Orangeburg could have preserved its rights by not terminating the contract and agreeing to pay a 30% higher rate from Duke while it continued to litigate here.
Right. I think we understand.
That's not a real choice for Orangeburg, which has to serve its retail customers and has its residential customers and wants to serve industrial customers.
Right. So, I think we understand your argument. Are you guys done? All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay.
The case is submitted.
Thank you.